You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Mexico has been getting a lot of adverse attention for its recent increase in violent crime. Many are attributing this to President Calderon's war on drugs. But Agustin Goenaga thinks there's a lot more to it. Agustin is a graduate student in political science at the University of British Columbia, and he joins me in the studio today. Good morning, Agustin.
Good morning.
So tell us, first of all, about the history of drug trafficking in Mexico over the last couple of decades.
Well, the history of drug trafficking goes pretty far back in time. And the first recorded events have to do with smuggling during the prohibition in the U.S. in the 1920s and 1930s. After the prohibition, Mexico mostly dealt with marijuana that was traveling up north in small quantities. There were small gangs that were doing this. During the 1980s, this begins to change as Colombian cartels are looking for new routes to export cocaine into the American market. And especially with the crackdown of the American government to the point of entry that traditionally was Florida, Colombian cartels look or find in these gangs the opportunity to move that those large amounts of drugs into the American market. Finally, when these Colombian cartels begin to break down towards the end of the 1980s and the beginning of the 1990s through the massive campaign led by the U.S. and the Colombian government, Mexican organizations started gaining a lot of force and actually running the show and controlling a lot of the supply of large amounts of cocaine that entered the North American market.
And drugs and violence are often linked together. Has the violence in Mexico been increasing over the last decade to reflect this growth in drug trafficking?
Well, that's a really interesting phenomenon, especially because it has generated a lot of media attention in the last couple of months. What the numbers have shown is that actually the levels of violence decreased systematically since 1992 until 2007. It seemed that the country was getting more violent. Media experts constantly compared the country with Colombia during its worst times. But actually, what the numbers have shown, and a great study by Pablo Escalante, a Mexican academic, has just been published on that, what the numbers show is that that was not the case, that violence had been decreasing, that murder rates towards 2006, 2005 were closer to the U.S., actually. What happened was that drug-related violence became much more visible. On the other hand, the tacit agreements, illegal or informal agreements, that existed between the PRA regime before 2000 and some of these drug cartels started also to break down. And as they break down, they generate a lot of uncertainty. And in the face of uncertainty, these actors become much more violent. So in the struggle for routes, in the struggle for territories, in the struggle for markets, they start fighting against each other. And we see a minor increase in violence between drug cartels in 2005, 2006 mostly, also quite localized in certain areas of the U.S.-Mexico border. Now, what is really interesting is that after President Calderon mobilizes the army and the federal police forces in late 2006, the beginning of 2007, we begin to see an increase, dramatic increase, in the levels of violence in the country. So the systematic decrease trend that we observed during most of the 1990s and 2000s is reversed over 2 years. And in 2008 and 2009, we go back to very, very high levels of violence that did not exist in the country since the 1980s.
So the sudden spike in violence then in 2007 occurs when the government goes in with a new strategy. And that strategy, you think that strategy is not effective?
Well, it's pretty complicated. The government's response to this is that actually the increase in violence is a sign that the strategy is working, in the sense that numbers seem to suggest that 90% of the killings that have happened since 2006 or 2007, most of these can be attributed to quarrels between drug cartels and to confrontations with the Mexican army. So what this shows, according to the government, and it's a quite sensible interpretation, is that as more pressure is put on these organizations, they become more desperate, and thus they become more violent. They start fighting against each other. As the leaders are caught or killed, there is fragmentation within the cartels, so quarrels increase, and we see this increase in the levels of violence. So that's one side of the story, and it sounds like a reasonable explanation, but in my opinion and other people's opinion, it's just a partial explanation. And the problem here is that the increase in violence in the last 2 years has been happening in those homicides related with organized crime, but also in other kinds of homicides, in levels of violence that involve actors that have nothing to do with these criminal organizations, in regions of the country that are not the regions traditionally associated with drug crimes or with drug dealing, and that are a very, very scary indicator, because they also form probably half of the killings that have happened in the last 2 or 3 years. So the big question that this poses to the government of President Calderon is, let's imagine in the best case scenario that you get all of these criminal organizations, that you control every single one of them. What is going to happen with this increasing trend in violence with other actors, right? With these other parts of the country that have nothing to do with this, but that have become more violent since the army and since the federal police forces have been mobilized in the territory.
Well, let's talk about that again a little bit more. The police and the federal police and the military go into local areas like Juarez and so forth. What happens to the local police and the local government organizations there?
Well, they tend to be dismantled by the federal police. The federal police assumes control of the territory. Even if they still operate, they only operate under the command of the federal police. Actually, the problem is that the government uses to legitimate these kind of actions is the corruption of the municipal police forces that has been proved throughout the last 30, 40 years, right? That has been quite common and well known that this is the case. However, as corrupt and as sketchy as these forces were, they served quite important roles in creating order. They oversaw and they regulated transactions that operated in the margins of legality. Yes, of course, some of this has to do with organized crime, and it's a big problem to have criminal organizations infiltrating the state structure in such a way, but also a lot of activities that have nothing to do with this. So let's think about illegal loggers, fisheries, unions, peasant organizations, street vendors, all these kinds of actors that operate, again, in the margins of legality, and that need somebody to create some kind of order, some form of protection, some form of conflict resolution. And municipal police forces seem to do this job during the last decades. As you mobilize the army or as you mobilize the federal police forces, you not only dismantle the agreements that exist between criminal organizations and the police, but also the agreements that exist between all these other societal actors that are a very large percentage of the Mexican population for obvious reasons, and between themselves and between the authorities. And this also increases the incentives to become violent.
Well, if I'm reading you correctly, you seem to be saying that there was a certain amount of corruption, but it was a corruption that was also connected with a certain amount of stability.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if we think about this historically, I can think of two different ways that order has been provided to large societies. So one is the creation of strong state institutions that provide this protection and provide these forms of conflict resolution. The other form is these clientelistic networks, where political brokers, big figures of political leaders that are connected somehow with the authority structure, but also are connected with the people, serve as the mediators that pretty much rule and direct transactions and interactions between different individuals, right, or different groups. Either of them can work. The problem is when you have one and you dismantle it without building the other one, because then people are put in a situation where their normal ways of living that they have been using for years and years are suddenly gone. And in the face of this situation, they will tend to fight for that, right? So once again, I mean, all this happens, yes, of course, in relation to organized crime, but also with every other thing that moves in the margins of legality, all these informal and illegal markets that are central in developing countries or, yeah.
It sounds like the government solution to the drug trade and drug trafficking is not working. It's just led to an increase in violence. What are your ideas for improving or changing the problems in Mexico with regards to drugs and violence?
Well, that is certainly a very difficult question. But in my opinion, the priority is a long-term strategy of state building. Certainly, it's hard to perpetuate these clientelistic structures that I was talking about before. The PRI regime was mostly based on these political brokers. And what it did was it fostered the kind of institutional fragility that we see today. However, it generated some kind of order. The only way that we can solve long-term problems of violence is by replacing those structures with real strong state institutions. And this is done by a state that is capable of providing protection that goes beyond policing and beyond coercion, a state that is capable of creating order by offering public services. So education, healthcare, everyday things such as, you know, the garbage collection or drains or everything like that, that creates the presence of the state in every small town that makes people happy with their lives, that makes people feel safe about how they're going to live their day tomorrow, how they're going to be to have access to the political system, to the formal economy, to even more to the larger societal value system, right? If the state is capable of doing this, then the incentives to become violent will be reduced. And also, the power of these political brokers will also be reduced. But this is a long-term strategy that takes a lot of resources and a lot of patience.
Well, Augustine, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you very much.
We've been speaking with Augustine Goenaga, a graduate student in political science at the University of British Columbia.